And it is another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in, wherever that may be, whether it's listening live, Joy 620 on your way home, or you're listening to the archive, the podcast show over on iTunes or Google Play app or wherever podcasts are found. You can find this show, and we certainly are grateful for that. Hopefully you had a great Christmas, an amazing new year. We are right here in 2020. It's hard to believe. I haven't done a Hope show in a couple of weeks now because it took time off for Christmas and, of course, New Year's. I did come in on New Year's Eve, early on New Year's Eve, and I filled in for Bob Bell along with my good friend Chuck Hooten, the worship pastor over at Shoreline Church. And we filled in for Bob Bell on New Year's Eve. That was a fun time. But, man, I haven't talked about Hope stuff or life and abortion on the air in a couple of weeks now, and there's a lot to talk about, So hopefully you had a great new year. We just quickly go through 2019 at Hope was amazing. One of the best years yet. And we are certainly grateful for your partnership and the work that we're able to do in 2019. Right now we're in the middle of Sanctity of Life Month. It's January. And so we're making our rounds. This past Sunday, I was at Belmont Heights Baptist Church speaking about life and Hope. This Sunday I will be, where will I be? This Sunday I'll be at Calvary Chapel over kind of John Sevier Highway. I'll join them this Sunday. Next week I will be joining the Seventh-day Christian Assembly on Saturday, and then Sunday be joining Union Baptist Church. And then we'll just keep plugging along. That's what January, that's kind of the norm for us in January is spending a lot of time at a lot of different churches. And we're grateful again for those partnerships and what we get to do with each of you as we talk about life and serve this city. And so today what we're going to do is there's a couple things in the news that we're going to discuss. The most recent thing is Planned Parenthood has come out with their annual report. I guess in their terms, the good things are going on at Planned Parenthood. In my view, this is the worst year yet for Planned Parenthood, as we saw record numbers of abortions. They're receiving more and more and more funds from taxpayers, and we're going to talk about that here in a little while. We're also going to just look at the March for Life is coming up in Washington, what that means, what that looks like, and who's participating in that. But first, what I want to start with is Michelle Williams. Michelle Williams is an actress that has been an actress for a long time and been working in Hollywood for a long time. Hollywood, over the last year and a half, we've really kind of seen what's coming out of Hollywood, and it's not been great. And so this week, there was an award show, and Ricky Gervais, who was the host, and he kind of let the Hollywood folks have it. And he even said, look, don't use this as a time to make political speeches. Just come up here and thank your agent. He said, thank your God, and then get off the stage. He said it a little bit more colorful than I just said it. And then, but Michelle Williams got up and she took her opportunity of winning an award to celebrate an abortion that she had years ago. And so for context, I want you to hear her speech. And then I want to kind of break down why it's important that we discuss this, what this means as they kind of normalize abortion and really the lies that society and culture is telling women and men when it comes to life and abortion. So listen to her speech and then we'll discuss.
Thank you so much. First of all, to my Fosse Verdon family and to the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. When you put this in someone's hands, you're acknowledging the choices that they make as an actor, moment by moment, scene by scene, day by day, but you're also acknowledging the choices they make as a person, the education they pursued, the training they sought, the hours they put in. I'm grateful for the acknowledgement of the choices I've made, and I'm also grateful to have lived at a moment in our society where choice exists, because as women and as girls, things can happen to our bodies that are not our choice. I've tried my very best to live a life of my own making, and not just a series of events that happened to me, but one that I could stand back and look at and recognize my handwriting all over, sometimes messy and scrawling, sometimes careful and precise, but one that I had carved with my own hand. And I wouldn't have been able to do this without employing a woman's right to choose. to choose when to have my children and with whom. When I felt supported and able to balance our lives, knowing, as all mothers know, that the scales must and will tip towards our children. Now, I know my choices might look different than yours, but thank God, or whomever you pray to, that we live in a country founded on the principle that I am free to live by my faith and you are free to live by yours. So, women, 18 to 118, when it is time to vote, please do so in your own self-interest. It's what men have been doing for years. It's what men have been doing for years, which is why the world looks so much like them. But don't forget, we are the largest voting body in this country. Let's make it look more like us. Tommy and Matilda, I can't wait to come home to you.
Okay, so I will note that at the end of that, she said, I can't wait to come home to you. Who is she talking to? Children, her children. And guess what? Michelle Williams is currently pregnant. Currently with child. And what she's saying is winning that award. Winning that award made the abortion years and years ago worth it. Now, what she didn't say was abortion. She never once used the word. She said, I was able to be afforded the right of a woman's right to choose when to have babies and with whom to have babies. And then she goes on to say, So women, vote in your self-interest. Now, when I first saw this, I was angry, but my heart breaks for Michelle Williams. I mean, clearly, I don't know her. I don't know her background. I don't know who. I don't know all of that. It's pretty clear to me. There's not been healing from that abortion. Now, she may would argue that there's no healing to be done, but there's people in the crowd cheering. There's people in the crowd crying. One could make an assumption that there are post-abortive people in that room, certainly. Men and women, men that have driven or paid for abortions, coerced women to get abortions, women that have went and gotten abortions. And so you have all of that for context. And you have her making a speech and saying that because she was allowed to have an abortion years ago, she was able to achieve the dream she set out for herself. She was able to reach the goals she set out for herself. But here's the thing. She won that award this year. She has kids right now. She has one inside of her right now. And she achieved the dream of an award. But arguing for your self-interest, and it's interesting to me. We live in a time where Hollywood and culture would say, look, we don't even have binary genders. We don't have male and female. There is no man and woman. It is whoever you want to be. But then she argues, for the self-interest of women, you should vote a certain way. How is that women empowering women? How is that feminism? What if the child she aborted was a female? I mean, we're living in a time, one of the most selfish times in history, maybe the most selfish time in history, where society and culture says your dreams are more important than family. Your dreams are more important than this pregnancy. Your dreams are more important. Where society and culture tells men your dreams are more important. Climbing that career ladder is more important than being a dad, than being a husband. And then they tell those same men to shut up and get out of the way. You have no say in the matter. And so men do that. Men shut up, get out of the way, leave the women, and say, fine, take care of it yourself. And then men are called deadbeats because guess what? A man that does not stand up and take up responsibility is not a man at all. He's a boy. And so this isn't about dunking on a Hollywood elite because of whatever. This is about a broken person that dealt with a very difficult decision years and years ago and had an abortion and is trying her best years later to make that decision seem okay and right in everyone's eyes and in her own eyes. But that's where we are. That's where we are. We're moving into 2020. And do you know that there are 1.1 million less babies, less children in this country than there were 10 years ago? Now, that's due to abortion. That's due to people not getting married. That's due to families not having babies for whatever reason. And so that's where we are. We're in a society that says, go do your own thing. Be who you want to be. Vote your self-interest. Care about yourself. Make yourself happy. Do what makes you happy. See, when you make those arguments, when you make those stances, then you become your idol. And of course we're going to have less children. Of course we are. Of course less people are going to vote because they're not thinking about the greater good. They're thinking about their good. So they can think that that's empowering. The funny thing to me is they would say, go and be you, vote your interest. But as soon as a woman stands up and says, I am 100% pro-life and I'm going to vote in that way, they call her, she's not woman enough. She's certainly not a feminist. You can't be pro-life and pro-woman. That's what culture and society would say. So it's all well and good to make these speeches and to say these things and go be who you want to be and all that. But if who you want to be is conservative, if who you want to be is a Christian, if who you want to be is someone that stands for traditional marriage, if who you want to be is someone that stands for the most vulnerable in society, which is the unborn, well, then don't go be who you want to be because we don't like you. That's what they would say. So I would encourage you, pray for the post-abortive folks that heard that speech. Pray for Michelle Williams. We have to be a country that would stand for the most vulnerable, and there are no more vulnerable people than those in the than the unborn. We'll be back. I raise a hallelujah in the presence of my enemies. I raise a hallelujah louder than the unbelief. I raise a So as we continue the conversation today, the Michelle Williams thing, and if you're just tuning in, Michelle Williams, an actress, she won an award and she used her acceptance speech to celebrate the abortion she had years ago that allowed her to achieve her dreams. And she gave this speech while being pregnant and while also having children at home. And so one thing, there's a couple things I want to point out. First off, why does she not use the term abortion when she talked about it? Instead, she used the right, the woman's right to choose. Why do they not say exactly what occurs in an abortion? Well, they don't say it because it makes people uncomfortable. Because when you explain that, well, I was pregnant and I'm no longer pregnant. Well, okay, well, what happened? There was a life and now there's not a life. Like when after our first child, my wife we got pregnant again, and we found out that she had a miscarriage. Went to the doctor, and we were told, you were pregnant. Now you're no longer pregnant. What did we get? What did we say? We didn't say, well, okay. I mean, no big deal. You're not pregnant anymore. No, that's not what we did. That's not what anyone does that has a miscarriage. You see, when you go from being pregnant to not being pregnant, that means there was a life, and now there no longer is a life. You see, something was there, and now it's not. And in this case, that something is a human. And for Christians, it's an image bearer. You see, so if she would have stood up and said, I wouldn't be where I am today without ending the life of my child, well, that changes the whole conversation, doesn't it? That certainly changes the tone of the speech. Well, so there was a reason why it wasn't described that way. But see, that's what we do in society, is that's what we all do. And this isn't just on her. This is on all of us. We all try to justify things in our lives, decisions that we've made. We try to make them, we be rational about it. Hey, well, I want to justify it. Let me explain. Let me. Well, when we start doing that, we start lying to ourselves. And so just tell us what it is. There was a life, a unique individual that had never been created before, and that life was terminated via abortion. You see, that the next child that she had didn't replace. It wasn't just a filler for the previous. You see, that was a unique individual that was never created before, will never be created again. And so we want to say, you know, the new feminism wants to celebrate the fact that they can control their bodies. But here's the interesting thing. You know, feminism is anything you can do, I can do better. That is kind of the mantra of woman power, right? You know, the one thing I can't do, like, for absolutely, the one thing I cannot do that a woman can do is have a baby. I can't. Now, society would say, you read some articles, society would say that men can have babies. I'm telling you, they can't. And so the new feminism would say, let's take the one thing that men can't do, and then let's just abort the baby. So in essence, wanting to be more like men. It's a weird justification. You know what Michelle Williams could have done was taken that opportunity to call for Hollywood to have better systems in place to support working moms and families. Why not that? Why not use that as an opportunity to say, women want to work in this business, but women also want to be moms? Why not use the opportunity to go after people like Harvey Weinstein, who were coercing women to do all sorts of things? No, instead, they want to use it to celebrate the removal of life from image bearers, from fellow humans. You see, and that's why we get upset, because when you read most of the headlines talking about this speech are saying, what a brave moment. She's so courageous. This is what abortion really is. And it allows for women to be empowered. None of that's true. None of that's true. What this does is it doesn't tell the whole story. It doesn't tell of the women that have had lasting physical and mental effects from abortions. It doesn't tell the lasting mental and physical effects that men have had by participating in those either. But see, that's how far we've gone. Used to, it was safe, legal, and rare. No one wants to have an abortion. No one wants to no one grows up going, I can't wait till one day I get to have an abortion. That's what they used to say. Even recently, presidential candidates have said, it's a very tough situation when a woman has to choose an abortion. No one wants to do that. What sounds to me, listening to this speech, one could argue she wanted to and is celebrating that decision. We even had in recent months an actress be interviewed and say, my second abortion was my favorite abortion. Is that helpful dialogue? You see, that's not empowering women. If I'm honest, that's masking probably some depression and some struggles that have occurred. And so if we make light of it, if we make jokes out of it, then I don't have to struggle. I don't have to deal with the pain. And so as we think through that, you know, pray for our society. Pray for the patients that are coming in to Hope Resource Center that are hearing this type of language and are looking at very difficult times and tough decisions and trying to figure out their next step. And folks, we can, you can, women can have their baby and their dreams. You do not have to pick one over the other. And the ironic thing is, Michelle Williams, standing on stage with a Golden Globe in her hand, winning the award while being pregnant, while telling her baby at home, I can't wait to see you, is a prime example that you can have your baby and your dreams. So while she says having the abortion allowed her to achieve her goals, the reality is much different. You can have a baby and your dreams. We see it every day. And what a wonderful truth that is. When we come back, we're going to talk about Planned Parenthood's latest annual report. And we're going to look through that and what that means for the future, what that means for federal spending, and what that means for abortion as a whole. We'll talk more when we come back.
So now I pour out my heart to you. Yeah. Here in your presence, I am.
So the conversation continues as we move forward. Okay, the Michelle Williams thing, I think we covered fully. That's where society and culture is. That doesn't mean that's where the church should be. That doesn't mean that we get down in the dumps. That just means we need to be very much intentional about our conversations and our love for our neighbor. And also know that people are hurting. And we see it often at Hope. Folks that are post-abortive, they are hurting. And so So when we see these comments, I'll admit that a lot of times I get angry, but we need to recognize first and foremost that there's some hurt there, how do we deal with that? How do we deal with those conversations moving forward? And so hopefully that was helpful. As we now turn to Planned Parenthood, they just released their annual report. They do this every year, and National Review has a great piece discussing it. So we're going to walk through that and then discuss from there. So Planned Parenthood has just released its annual report for the 2018-19 fiscal year. and the numbers don't come as much of a surprise. In 2018, Planned Parenthood facilities performed, listen to this number, this is the most they've ever performed, 345,672 abortions, an increase of more than 13,000 abortions from what the group reported for the previous fiscal year. That's also the highest number of abortions that the group has ever performed in a single year since it began reporting its abortion data. This statistic reveals that as the abortion rate in the U.S. has declined steadily over the last several decades, Planned Parenthood's share of the annual abortions in the nation has continued to increase. Hear that again. So abortion numbers have declined. We've discussed this at length in past shows. Since Roe v. Wade, we have seen a 53% decrease in abortions in this country. During that same amount of time, we've seen abortion clinics close, over 300 abortion clinics close since 3 years ago, we've seen over 300 abortion clinics close. But during that time, Planned Parenthood has seen its abortion numbers steadily grow. Late last year, the Centers for Disease Control released its data for 2016, showing about 623 abortions for the year and reporting that the abortion rate had dropped yet again, according to the CDC. And we just talked about that. Based on the CDC statistics then, Planned Parenthood clinics perform more than half of the total reported abortions in the U.S. And based on other reporting, well over one-third of the estimated annual abortions each year. Planned Parenthood executives ritually insist that abortion is just 3% of the group's services, a carefully manufactured statistic that has been deemed inaccurate and misleading by left-leaning outlets such as Slate and the Washington Post, even as the group performs somewhere between one-third and half the total abortions in the U.S. every single year. Contrast Planned Parenthood's 345,000 abortions in 2018 with the other actual services the group's facilities offered. According to the report, the group offered 9,798 prenatal care services and made 4,279 adoption referrals, which means that its facilities performed 35 abortions for every instance of a prenatal care and 81 abortions for every adoption referral. At the same time, the group obtained the largest share of its revenue from government reimbursements and grants, despite having spent the entirety of Trump's presidency fundraising off of fear-mongering about how Republicans intended to block women from receiving reproductive health care. Based on Planned Parenthood's own reporting alone, its federal funding should be stripped and redirected to healthcare organizations that actually serve women, rather than a group that profits from ending an increasing number of innocent human lives while the U.S. abortion rate continues to fall. So, you know, I've been on here and you've read multiple articles that said Planned Parenthood receives $500 million a year from the federal government. Well, in their report, they state that they received over $600 million that fiscal year from the federal government. You know, this is where I get really, really concerned. You know, we're told by folks to go vote pro-life. We're told by folks, hey, if you put me in Washington, if you put me if you put me in the state house or the Senate, or if you put me in Washington, or if you put me in the Oval Office, we are going to defund Planned Parenthood. That's what we're told. We've been told that for years. Not only have they not been defunded from the federal government, the funds have increased. They have increased. We have seen a lot of good come from the current administration when it comes to pro-life issues. We have. We've seen judges be put on the court that are very pro-life, not just at the Supreme Court level, but across the board. The Senate has confirmed more judges during President Trump time than any president. And most of them, if not all of them, very much conservative, very much pro-life, that we are going to reap those rewards for a long, long, long time. We're going to see amazing things occur because of that. All of that is good. But what continues to frustrate me is even when we had a so-called pro-life White House and a pro-life House and Senate in D.C., we did not defund Planned Parenthood. And yet Planned Parenthood goes and they say, look, these Republicans, these pro-lifers are going to they're going to take away the right of women to choose. They're going to take away funding when they're not taking away funding. So they've been fundraising off the back, off that lie. If anything, Planned Parenthood should come out and say, thank you so much, Congress, for your bipartisan support of funding us at levels that are insane. $600 million. That's why I get frustrated. I get frustrated because I read articles that attack pregnancy centers and say that pregnancy centers are deceptive in their advertisement, that pregnancy centers are well-funded, that pregnancy centers are coercing women. You see, we see articles written like that by mainstream outlets, which are not true. We're not deceptive. If deceptive means we're opening up across from an abortion clinic, then I'm sorry. Then I guess Burger King is deceptive when they open up across from McDonald's. No, that's just what you do. If we're deceptive because we post online, hey, if you have questions about pregnancy, come see us. At no point in anything we post or say would you think that that Hope Resource Center provides or refers for abortion. In fact, we say everywhere, we do not provide or refer for abortion. You go to our website, it's clear, we're a faith-based organization. There's no deception there. And then arguing that pregnancy centers are well-funded or better funded than the abortion industry is just laughable. You could combine, there's over 3,000 pregnancy centers in this country. You could combine all of our budgets, and you wouldn't even come close to equaling what Planned Parenthood receives from the government. Not counting all the funds that they're raising, but we wouldn't even come close to what they're receiving from the government. And guess what? The vast majority, I would say over 75% of pregnancy centers, probably higher than this, probably in the 90 percentile, of pregnancy centers do not receive a dime of taxpayer funding. Not a dime. Also, I would say over 90% of pregnancy centers don't charge a dime to a patient or to insurance. Because we believe we just want to help people. We'll foot the bill. We'll take care of that. We'll partner with folks to do that. But what you have is an organization like Planned Parenthood raising all these funds and then committing. Not too long ago, they committed $40 million to fight pro-life candidates that are running across the country. So they're raising money to fight politicians while pregnancy centers are raising money to simply serve patients, to provide baby showers, to provide ultrasounds, to provide testing, to provide love and care and service to the women of our city. And so if it's possible, if a politician is listening to this show, and you claim to be pro-life, I would simply say to you, there is no reason why this organization should receive over $500 million of taxpayer funds. I'm not even telling you to reallocate those to pregnancy centers. I'm not telling you to reallocate those to pro-life organizations. I'm just simply saying our taxpayer dollars should not be going to an organization that provides $345,000 abortions. I'm simply saying our taxpayer dollars shouldn't go to an organization that performs half of the abortions in this country. I don't know, it's just me. But we know how budgets work. Now they're going to argue none of those funds go toward abortion. Well, this can't be true. Because what those funds do is it frees them up to provide more abortions. They are an abortion organization. They fired their last president because she wasn't pro-abortion enough. And so, yes, we have seen amazing decreases in abortion across since Roe v. Wade, and that's awesome. And we've seen pregnancy centers open up all over this country, and that's awesome. But Planned Parenthood continues to see that abortion number increase inside their walls. and they continue to see that that federal tax money increase in their bank accounts. So I would simply say to you, if you want to fight back, if you want to stand up, if you want to protect life, find a pregnancy center near you and step up and help them financially. We're not getting the funds from the government, and frankly, I don't want the funds from the government. But the church can step up and step in to this situation. We'll be back. So as we finish today, I just want to end with some audio from something that I heard today, and I know that we've been talking about some heavy stuff this afternoon and this past 45 minutes to an hour, and so I wanted to end with this, and many of you may know that Dr. Lois Evans, that's Tony Evans, Dr. Tony Evans' wife, passed away recently, and from all that I can tell, the family is just. Man, you talk about raising some good children. It appears as if they raised some amazing, amazing, godly, and faithful children. And so I came across today, somebody posted that they were watching the funeral was broadcast. And at the funeral, Jonathan Evans, one of the sons, was speaking and eulogizing his mom. And what he had to say is something that I think all of us need to hear. So I want you to hear that, and then we'll talk more here in a sec.
And as I was wrestling with God, he answered. And he said, number one, you don't understand the nature of my victory. Because I didn't answer your prayer your way doesn't mean that I haven't already answered your prayer anyway. Because victory was already given to your mom. You don't understand. Because of the victory that I have given you, there was always only two answers to your prayers. Either she was going to be healed or she was going to be healed. Either she was going to live or she was going to live. Either she was going to be with family or she was going to be with family. Either she was going to be well taken care of or she was going to be well taken care of. Victory belongs to me.
So you better preach that. I listened to that today in my office, and my goodness. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where we know that's true. We know that's true. And I think it rings even more true when you're burying a loved one, whether that be a mom or a sibling or a child or a grandparent, and especially when someone is sick, you're praying for their healing. You're praying that God would take that cancer away. You're praying that God would take that dementia away. You're praying that God would take that illness away, that depression away. And the beautiful thing about what this young man had to say about his mom was, he knows the truth. And he said that he felt it in his soul that God said, look, there was always two answers. And it was either she's going to be healed or she's going to be healed. Either she's going to be with family or she's going to be with family. Because the fact remains, if she, and she certainly was a Christian, Scripture tells us that to live is Christ and to die is gain. And so, look, we win either way. And so to put that in context, as we think about the issues that we are facing in our current society, when we think about abortion, when we think about life, when we think about the lives that have been lost, when we think about the fear and the depression and the mental illness that we are seeing in our society, we serve a God that reigns. And so I don't know who needed to hear that message today, but I know I didn't know I needed to hear it today, but when it came across my feed, I needed to hear that today. And that even this, even though this sweet woman, this sweet mom, this sweet wife was taken, some would say, too soon to a horrible illness, that we have peace knowing that she's healed today. She's with family today. She's well taken care of today. Even more so than she was in her earthly body. And so we celebrate that today. And I think that too many times we fail to celebrate those moments and that truth. That doesn't make it easier. That doesn't mean we don't mourn the loss. But it puts that loss into context. And what an amazing, amazing truth that is. I hope today's show has been helpful. I hope it's opened your eyes on a couple things in terms of the life and abortion issue. And I hope that you will step out and you will support a pregnancy center, whether that be Hope Resource Center here in Knoxville, or if you're listening from out of state or from somewhere else, that it would be one in your area. Because, folks, we need to partner with each other. The church needs to be the leading vehicle in this movement. And so when I go up to D.C. in a couple weeks to the March for Life and I see hundreds of thousands of people there, the media is not going to report on that. They're not going to talk about it. But there'll be close to 500,000 people standing and saying life has value and needs to be protected in the womb. Will you partner with us to make sure that happens here in Knoxville and around this country? I hope so. We'll talk to you next week.